You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you touch it, so really, really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give you information, asking for more, but makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hey everybody, this is Dave Hodges. I am the host of the Common Sense Show, and we are freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time, and we have a really good show for you tonight. I mean, a really good show. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by my friend Daniel Brigman, who is the owner and founder of Numana Foods, and we're going to talk about how food can be used as a weapon against the people. And it's something that I have written about in the past, and it's something I see evidence of going on in places like Venezuela. And we're going to approach that topic, and then we'll just take it wherever it goes. In the second hour, we're going to be joined by Doug Hagman, and we're going to talk about a number of things, but in particular, we want to talk about mandatory RFID chips. And that's going to be a subject that we hit with Doug. And, of course, in the top of the third hour, we're going to be joined by Katie Whalen, our health reporter. And actually, she's on board with us right now. And say hi, Katie. Okay, maybe Katie stepped away to get a drink of water. Anyway, she's supposed to be on with us right now.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Katie. Anyway, and Katie's going to be with us in the third hour, and she's got another interesting health report. And at the bottom of the third hour, we're going to be joined by Christina Saro from La Junta, Colorado. And there are some really, really disturbing things going on in La Junta, Colorado. And, yeah, Walmart's back in the news, but it's a lot more than that. It's a lot bigger than Walmart. And we're going to bring her on and see if we can't unravel the mystery. But if people don't think there are not going to be detentions and roundups, well, you might have a different opinion by the close of the show tonight. Well, we have a number of very generous sponsors who help make this broadcast possible. Among them, my good friend Steve Quayle from Renaissance Precious Metals, who loves to say, if you can't touch it, you don't own it. And I totally agree with Steve on that point. You need to have precious metals that'll replace your soon-to-be worthless cash. As you know, the banks are going down. We talk about it all the time. And how can you get it? Well, simply call Steve tomorrow, 406-586-4842. Again, Steve's number, 406-586-4842. And my good friend Bob Griswold, who's a frequent guest on this show because of his extensive knowledge of prepping. And he is one of the kings of prepping in this country. And he has a website, readymaderesources.com, and he has something for everybody. Whether it's his night vision, or whether it's his water treatment, or his communication devices, and oh, by the way, speaking of that, we may get into this tonight with either one of our first two guests, but they're practicing for the phones going down, and that's something that I'll make sure we hit on before we close tonight. And Bob sells communications equipment that is designed to circumvent shutting down our cell phones. And by the way, they beta tested it in eastern New Mexico and western Texas, and I've got an article up on the Common Sense Show about that. Don't go there now. Go there after the show. Well, how do you get a hold of Bob, and how do you view his great product line? Well, first, you go to readymaderesources.com, and he's got everything right there. It's a really easy-to-navigate site, and then give Bob a call. And it's the most low-pressure, just like Steve Quayle's, the most low-pressure sales you're ever going to get, 800-627-3809. Again, Bob's number is 800-627-3809. And finally, our third sponsor for this hour is Numana Foods. And Numana Foods, I believe so much in them. The prices are so reasonable. The quality of the food is it's really good. I mean, it's gourmet. It's chicken and beef and all the stuff you want. And they got a grab-and-go bucket in case you have to bug out. And they got something for everybody. And right now, till midweek, we have a Labor Day sale going on for Common Sense Show listeners. And if you use the coupon code LABOR, L-A-B-O-R, in honor of Labor Day, use the coupon code LABOR, you can get 5% off your Numana order. So if you've been putting off ordering because you're waiting for that sale, that special, well, here it is. It's right here, right now. Go to numana.com/Hodges. Again, that's numana.com/Hodges. And speaking of Numana Foods, it's my privilege to introduce our first guest, Daniel Brigman. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Wow, my pleasure. Quite an introduction, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's really our pleasure to have you back. You've been such a good guest in the past, and things are happening so quickly, Daniel. And I do want to touch on food as a weapon, but we can get to that in any order. But I just wanted to ask you a basic question I'm asking everybody coming on now. What's number one on your hit parade right now in terms of what has you the most concerned for America? I know a lot's going on. In fact, I was just on Lisa Haven's show, and Lisa asked me that question. I said, well, Lisa, it's about 1A, 1B, and 1C. What is it for you?
Well, I think you hit on it. It's hard to put them in order. I'll tell you what's most at the front of my mind. Let's put it that way. Obviously, I'm in the food storage preparation. We'll get into that. Let's put that aside for a second. Number one on my mind, at the front of my mind, is this election. And there's several facets of it that have really captivated me and got my attention. You know, 2 years ago, if somebody would have told me there was a candidate that was saying that Obama funds and arms ISIS, saying that immigration is destroying our worker class, saying that these foreign trade deals are destroying our manufacturing and we need to reverse it. If you would have said there was a candidate that said all those things, that got any traction, and that actually had a chance to win the White House, I would have thought you were crazy. But yet here we are, 2016, a couple, 3 months away from the election, and Donald Trump, like him, love him, warts and grisly personality and all, stands here in stark opposition to an establishment that is turning American exceptionalism into globalism, into serfdom, into another form of feudalism, that everything that you've warned us about, everything that we've discussed for years and decades that has slowly been playing out, it seems, it appears, I do not know Donald Trump personally, but it appears that he now stands at this critical juncture as an alternative to this system. And so I think just like Brexit with Europe, you're seeing a rise of populism where the people want back control of their country, of their lives. They see the demand, everything being pushed down them in their life, and they're tired of it, and they want a change. Now, for me personally and my family, has Donald Trump said rude things? Has Donald Trump been out of line? Has Donald Trump done this? Yes, yes, and yes to all of the above. Yeah. But this is not about Donald Trump as I see it. And this is so critical and so crucial, because everything that we have hoped for, everything that patriots of this country and who believe in the America that is rapidly being taken from us, Donald Trump's candidacy offers hope that things can turn the corner. Is he perfect? No. Can he turn the corner? Yes, from what I've seen. I believe that he can. And really, it's not one person, whatever. So what's the forefront of my mind? For years, you have been warning. Other people have been warning. You know, Cleon Skousen in the 50s, 60s, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, written in the early 70s, about this overarching conspiracy to take our freedom, take the Constitution, shred it, and rape America. I hate to use that word, but it's really, that's what's gone. The wealth, the ingenuity, the freedom of America has been raped from us in a very slowly but violent way, and the hearts and minds of our children have gone with them, and we can say no. We are winning, and the fact that there's a candidate who is speaking out against this, that is number one on the forefront of my mind, and it's such a positive thing, and it says that we got to redouble our efforts. Don't back down, but redouble your efforts. That's number one on my mind.
I couldn't agree with you more. We do need to redouble our efforts. The problem is, I'm coming out with a couple of articles tomorrow, Daniel, that talk about the psychological reasons why people accept their fate. Now, that doesn't describe most of my listening audience. It certainly doesn't describe the mnemonic customers who are actively taking steps to survive what's coming. But it certainly does describe most of America, well over half, who get their news from CNN, and they're taking comfort in the fact that everything is okay because Obama comes on TV and tells them so. How do we reach those people?
Well, I think, I put this on Donald Trump. I am not a Donald. I don't have his autographed picture on my wall and kiss it every day. And I may come off like I'm sounding that way, but what Donald Trump has done is he has framed this discussion in a totally different light. And he has forced the hand of the news media to show exactly who they are. So when you ask me how to reach the majority of people, or this body of people who are kind of in the malaise, is they are reaching themselves, and these news stations are showing what liars they are. And they're showing what they really stand for. And even Fox News, I almost detest Fox News now more than CNN. I know what CNN is. I mean, conservative people know what MSN is, right? They know what Rachel Maddow is about. But now it seems like Fox News, Donald Trump has the best week of his life, of his candidacy, I mean, with going down to Mexico, his immigration speech, I mean, the momentum he's building, everything. And you listen to Fox News, and it sounds like he's on his way to the gallows or something. I mean, they are showing themselves. So right now, how do you reach somebody? Is you start pointing out these little things, you know, saying maybe, you know, if you're talking to somebody, maybe you say, you know, I don't believe these polls. Hillary Clinton can barely fill a school auditorium. Donald Trump has to turn people away in big arenas. You know, just little things like that, and people are starting to see the contrast. The other thing, remember the American Revolution, and this is the greatest lesson from the American Revolution, is a minority of people are willing to sacrifice everything for liberty, they cannot be defeated. That is the greatest lesson of the American Revolution. So, even during the American Revolution, it wasn't a majority of the people that was for it. There was a minority of people that were adamantly willing to risk their life for it. There was another group of people on the other side that were completely for the king, that were Tories, that thought we should just go under British subjection again. And then there's this big mass of people in the middle. Sound familiar? It's like just like today. This big mass of people that was just going back and forth, really, you know, whichever way the wind blows. In the big scheme of things, in a lot of ways, those people don't matter. And in history, they don't matter. And in America, most certainly, in American history, that person has not mattered at all. And we're to the point now in these elections where we've let the small minority of people who would be vigilant and active and aggressive have let themselves kind of go into back into that malaise, into that big majority. So really, the battle is not for the majority in my mind. It's for that active, super aggressive, just burning with fire liberty person on the fringe of that, that we can pull back towards, hey, there's hope, there's light at the end of the tunnel, get on the train, here we go.
Yeah, unfortunately, the train right now is headed to the FEMA camp, but I'm sorry to tell you. I'll tell you what's in my mind, Daniel. I'm interviewing a lady who I've had communication with over the last couple of years, a wonderful person named Christina Sorrell, and she's from Lahana, and she's sitting in a FEMA camp that's being constructed, I mean, literally in her town, and all the support facilities are there, and It's frightening. But anyway, going back, I digress, but going back to what you're saying, I do agree. I would rather have 3% doing something than 50% doing very little. I totally agree with what you're saying. But we have a lot of good people out there that could help our movement if we could only reach them. And reaching them is the problem. I mean, you know, we have to fight for our audience and to secure numbers. And CNN, people just flip on the cable or the satellite, and there they are, telling all their lies. So they have a built-in advantage. And then there's also the psychological factors I mentioned. There's groupthink, and if you watch enough TV, you think everything's okay, and you think like the group, and you go along with the group, and everything's fine, and people like you and I are insane and should be locked up. And go ahead.
Well, I think your analysis is 100%. I mean, it's fantastic. And the way that you're able to put up these psychological mirages, I guess. I don't know. The tricks, traps, I don't know, whatever you'd call them. And make people aware of them, I think it's fantastic. What I would also say is, okay, I'll give you an example. I was at the pool. I don't know, this is probably 3 or 4 weeks ago in the middle of summer. I don't know, it was hot. We went to the pool, took the kids. There weren't a lot of people there, it was more towards the evening. There was a guy there, he had an obvious Mexican accent, or, you know, Spanish accent, whatever. He was from Dallas. We got to talk, and we kind of hit it off. He's a good fella. We started talking back and forth, and he was talking, he was actually from Dallas. And he was saying about the cops who got shot there and all that. And then he said that people in Dallas, in his communities, were saying that Trump was going to take away the guns and da-da-da this and da-da-da this. And I just listened. I didn't really say anything. I didn't know where he's coming from. I just kind of just listened. And then he went on for the next 5 minutes and explained how he didn't believe anything they said. He didn't believe that Trump was going to take the guns. He hates Hillary Clinton. He can't stand what's going on, and he doesn't believe anything that they say. And this is a man that, you know, if you believe CNN, this is the kind of man that would spit on Donald Trump and would hate him and would hold up signs and protest him and his whole family.
Right.
So I think that a tide is being pushed. Buttons have been pushed. Now, whether it's fast enough, whether it's whatever, I don't know. But whatever the next step is being taken, every bit of information you can put in people's mind now, as this establishment lays out their plan or executes their plan, and it becomes in plain view, it becomes obvious what they're doing, then that's, people will wake up exponentially because of the groundwork that's being done now by people just like yourself. So when you ask the question, how do you reach them? You just keep pumping truth bombs or whatever you want. I don't know what word you want to use. And as the conspirators in this country reveal themselves by their actions, as they become more and more desperate to suppress the Trump candidacy and all that stands for, they make it more and more obvious exactly what they are to people. And so the people that we need, the 20%, the 30% of people who are just like, I don't believe any of this BS anymore, they are going to naturally start flowing. And even if they execute FEMA directives, even if they execute all the things, that's just going to make those people be incensed even more. There's something in the American spirit, in the American person, that once sparked, it cannot be stopped. And we're rapidly approaching that spot, is my prayer and hope.
I could not agree with your last statement more. When you said, when the American people, and I'll paraphrase here, are moved to action, I agree. We will be the world's most formidable force when that happens. And I do believe we'll get the effort. And from a lot more than 20 to 30%. Here's my fear, Daniel. My fear is this, is that I know that Americans kind of inherently, they have a semblance of their history. We know our culture. We know about the Second Amendment, the First Amendment. We know that we're supposed to have rights. And that's ingrained in almost all of us. And that will be our rallying cry someday. But what worries me is, will too many people wake up when it's too late to really affect a change, and we'll find ourselves totally subjugated? Now, I don't think defeat's ever permanent. I think the Viet Cong showed that in South Vietnam. I mean, we had a well-trained military force. They had somewhat good leadership, and there were problems, but we were well-trained, good leadership, won every battle, but we couldn't win the war because they wouldn't quit. Is that what it's going to take for America to basically throw off the shackles is generations of guerrilla warfare until the other side gets tired of it and they quit?
I don't know. I mean, that's similar to what happened in the American Revolution, right? I mean, that's
7 years.
Straight.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar, and they, especially at the beginning, they're losing every battle. I don't know.
In Vietnam, there used to be a saying that we're born in the North to die in the South, and it was a country that knew continuous warfare from 1940 to 1975. 35 years, the Japanese, the French, and the Americans. 35
wow.
years, almost two generations of warfare, and they were never going to quit because it was so ingrained in who they are. We don't accept outsiders, and we'll keep fighting, and it doesn't matter how long. Americans have remote controls, and we expect things to come on immediately when we press the switch, and we're this instant gratification society. I don't know if we could be in a guerrilla war for a month.
You make a valid point, Dave, as usual. You make a very valid point, don't you? But, you know, it is what it is. You know, what can you do about those people? There's a battle for independence. Those type of people, there's not much you can do anyway. You know, if push comes to shove. And any kind of preparedness or emergency, I mean, even, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about Venezuela. I mean, you talk about Venezuela, people are... they're pushed to the point of just stark desperation right here in the 2016, where the country even right next to them has plenty of food, but they can barely sustain themselves. So, you know, I don't have all the answers. What I have is hope. What I have is history. What I have is the blessing that's been on this country will not die easily. And what's been in the people's heart will not die easily. And I know a lot of people, just like you do, who feel very strongly and very adamantly. And that energy is hard to extinguish, no matter what they throw at us and no matter what they do. There is a certain energy and feeling and certainty in so many of my friends, so many of the people that you know, that will refuse to accept whatever they do, even if it comes to death, comes to push, comes to shove. They just will not physically accept it within their power.
I would take hope over resources. And don't get me wrong, Americans need to hang on to their guns. Americans need to store food. Americans need to store water. But I would take hope over any resource right now, because it's hope that'll keep you fighting. Now, of course, you have to have the other things too. But we hope is really where it's at. And one of the things, and I got to tell you, I get criticized on both ends. I'll write the one article and one criticism that I'll receive, and I appreciate the feedback. Believe me, I do. I love the feedback because I don't pretend to have all the answers. But one criticism I'll get is, Dave, you're too doom and gloom, and you're taking away all the hope. And then on the other hand, for the same article, it'll be, it's over. God's removed his blessing. America's going to fall. And there's an argument you can make for these views. I do agree some with what the people write to me. But then it's kind of like, there's nothing we can do. And I don't think there's nothing you can do until you die. I really feel
great
that
point.
We need to...
Great point.
Yeah, and these are criticisms I'll get within the same article from well-meaning people who aren't being vicious. They're not attacking me. They're just giving me their worldview, which I appreciate. But I look at this and I put them side by side. I kind of chuckle at life's irony. But then I say, these are the people we're trying to bring together. And we're so divergent. You know, here's one thing that bothers me about Trump, and I want to get your reaction to this. I think Trump is ignoring the black American vote. I really do. And I have to tell you that with the blacks who I've known in my life, they're motivated by the same things that motivate me. They want their children to have a better life than what they had, and they're willing to do what it takes to make that happen. And I really feel Trump could be addressing this issue because he could be saying, hey, with the Democrats, you know what you're getting? You're getting 50 million Americans on food stamps. You're getting a rising unemployment rate while they continue to lie about what it is. And your kids have no future. The college loans are suffocating everybody. So even if your kid could get a college loan, he won't pay it off in a way where he'll have meaningful employment. And if we could talk to people specifically saying, do you really want to burden your kid for another generation of welfare? And certainly I'm not addressing all blacks, but I'm talking about the largest number of people percentage-wise who are on welfare. I think Trump should be talking to these parents this way.
I think you
I care
it.
About what happens you to your
it.
Kids.
I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, the every white, black, Chinese, yellow, red, whatever color you can find person that I know who's halfway sane, they want their children to be happy, right? They want safety for their children. They want all these things. And so the media, again, this is kind of a mirage. The media has put us like black against white, like our interests are different, like our interests are so competing. And I don't see that at all. And I think you had such a valid point about that Trump has not, you know, can Republicans not go after black votes or something? I mean, is there some written rule about that? Having said that,
I think they're ignoring them.
Up to this point, it seems like that. Just recently, it's in, you know, Trump went to Detroit. He went to the black church. I think maybe he's gotten it that, hey, maybe I need to just talk directly to his people. Just, why do I need to go through all these filters? Why do I need to go through Jesse Jackson type entities to talk to black people? I'm just going to talk to them just like I do white people. I went right to white people and I talked right to them. So why can't I talk to black people like that? It's almost insulting, right? That media, that politicians, that parties, it almost like they want to keep us segmented, like you got to talk to black people different than white people. I mean, it's ridiculous. We're Americans. I mean, no matter what, white, black, even, you know, this idea that we're a melting pot. America was never a melting pot. That is such it's such a delusion of what America was. Everybody kept their own identity. Everybody kept their own, I'm German, or I'm Irish, or I'm, that's why, you know, St. Patty's Day parades in Chicago are a huge thing, because you kept this national identity. You kept your heritage. What bound you is that you were Americans and that you honored what the American flag stood for, the Constitution, that all men are created equal and endowed with certain unalienable rights. This is what America is. That is what bound everybody. It wasn't so much a melting pot as it was a conglomeration of cultures into all unifying behind one ideal. And you could be black, you could be purple, you could be Irish, you could be white, you could be whatever. And you can have your own cultural identity, which you should, and you should be proud of. But when push comes to shove, you were an American. And so I hope that Trump is getting the message that he needs to just talk directly to these people, because it's almost insulting. You know, they accuse him of being racist. What's racist is that the Democratic Party and these politicians have talked to them and talk and really insulted their intelligence for these decades. That's what's racist, if you want my opinion.
I agree. The black people who I know who have, quote, made it, you know, they're gainfully employed, they have money in the bank, they're well educated, their kids are thriving, you know, they talk a lot like you and I. This is not a racial issue, this is an economic issue. And what they see, and I'll tell you what a lot of black people tell me from middle class and upper middle class, what they see is race pandering from the Democrats. That, shut up, sit down over here, black people, we'll keep you from starving, but we're not going to give you any hope, but in return you got to give us your votes. That's how I would categorize the Clinton campaign as she's approaching black people, rather than empowering this next generation of young black youth not to be the highest incarcerated group in America, not to have death by gunshot be the number one cause of death between 19 and 30 years of age. But we need to empower them to want to achieve and give them the means to do it. And with the Democrats, it's a dead-end street. Here are your food stamps. Shut up, go away, and vote for us every 4 years. I don't know if I'm off base, but that's how I see it.
Yeah, well,
that's how a lot of my black friends see it, too.
Well, I think they're figuring that out. No, I mean, I think it's more and more they're starting to see that. I am extremely encouraged and hopeful that. Let me go back a second. Let me tell you what drives me nuts right now is people who are. I know they're conservative people. I know they're God-fearing people. I know they, you know, believe basically, you know, America, apple pie, opportunity, constitution. I know that's what they believe. But then when I talk to them about the upcoming election, they say, well, I don't really like either one. I don't really want to support either one. And I want to throw my hands in the air. I'm like, you don't, come on. I am not 100% for Trump. I am 1,000% for Trump because I look at everybody who is against him. Well, let's see. The United Nations against him. NATO's against him. Hillary Clinton's against him. The Democrat Party's against him. The Republican Party's against him. John Kasich's against him. All NAFTA and all those people are against him. They're all everybody who I can't stand. Everybody who I can't stand has pulled out every stop that they have to silence and eliminate Donald Trump's candidacy. And it's not about his personality. It's about him. His message. And as people, if you're conservative and God-fearing person and believe in the promise of America, in my opinion, you have to get behind him 1,000%. If not, what candidate will you ever get behind? What, you know, we only get the candidates we deserve? Well, what better message from a candidate could you ever hope to get? So, black, white, purple, indifferent, let's get that message. Let's be aggressive and let's be hopeful. And I think we've made headway this year. This is the year of Jubilee, everybody. This only happens once every 50 years on a Jewish calendar. This is the year of Jubilee, when all bonds are broken, when all debt and slavery is broken, when all the sins are shouted upon the rooftop. And here we have, in the Feast of Trumpets that just happened, we have a man named Trump who is trumpeting the lies and everything that he sees, and he's pointing his finger right at the middle of the military industrial intelligence industrial complex of this country that has held us hostage for 50 years and say, you are liars, you are the problem, and I am going to change this. How can you not support that man?
No, I agree. And even if you don't like the man, I mean, people say, I don't like his comb over. He's gruff and abrasive. You know what?
I don't either.
I agree. I agree with him. You know, I get uncomfortable listening to him at times, but when I pull that lever in November, and I'm going to if we have an election, I'm voting for the movement, not necessarily for the man.
100%. 100%. I do think a lot more black people are behind Trump than not.
I'll tell you, the black people that are behind Trump that I'm aware of and people who I interact with are the ones who are comfortable economically. And they can see that if their kids are going to have the same future that they're having, that we need to change course from the direction we're going. But unfortunately, when you're dealing with the masses, and I don't care if you're white, black, Hispanic, but when you're poor and socioeconomic and the education's not the primary focus, it's putting food on the table, then these people don't necessarily know their history as well, and they're more easily manipulated, and that's what I see the Democratic Party being experts at. They're experts at basically recruiting the disadvantaged, using them for their purposes, and then throwing them into the garbage like a piece of waste.
Well, they definitely have a machine behind them. There's no question that they're extremely efficient on whatever, you know, the machinery of political machinery for the last 100 years has just been building and building. And now they, you could dare say it's a miracle that Trump's candidacy has gotten the traction that it has received. I mean, you could darn near say that in the face of everything that you believe, that I believe, that we have seen in this country, and all these things going on, and here right in the middle of it is a man who dares to get on the national stage and say that Obama and Hillary Clinton are the ones who started ISIS. Just that fact alone, are you for real? Right in the middle of this hurricane that is surrounding the liberty of this country, he is standing up and saying, everybody is screwing you. These politicians have been screwing you for years. The international trade agreements are killing manufacturing. And, oh, by the way, I don't believe anything about the 9/11 story. I don't believe about Hillary Clinton's security in Benghazi. I mean, it's unbelievable. It almost defies logic. And it shows, here's what it shows. If you, again, I'll go back. The very first thing I said when I got on your show today, if you would have went back 2 years and you said there was a candidate that would actually receive traction, that would be in this position, that would say those things, nobody would have believed it. So what does that say about our chances? What does that say about hope? What does that say about what we've accomplished? What does that say about every person who's taken one of Dave Hartz's articles, read it, copied it, pasted it, and then emailed it to their list, or handed it to their neighbor on a piece of paper? What does that say about your effort? It says that the universe and that the American spirit is working together and is not dead, and that there is hope. And so let nobody be unhopeful. And all this information that we're talking about the rest of the show, that Dave Hodges has talked about, there is no reason to let it bury you emotionally. Be realistic about it. These are real situations. But always have hope in America and what America stands for. Because the universe will bend to defend a group of people that will die for liberty. And Patrick Henry, the greatest speech in American history, it is so far above anything that anybody's given. I don't want to hear anything about the Emancipation Proclamation. Patrick Henry's speech in 1875 is the greatest speech this country has ever seen, probably the greatest speech in millennium. And one of the main things he says is that God will fight our battles for us, that people united in liberty cannot be defeated. You know, they were telling him that we didn't even have a chance in that. He said, not only do we not have a chance, we can't lose. So no matter what hardship must come or will come, no matter what indignity that we are called to endure, that spirit will triumph. And that I am assured of.
Do you think this is a supernatural movement? I'm speaking of the Trump movement.
At some level, yes. Yeah. No question. It's a miracle. And I'm not trying to put a halo on Donald Trump. I'm not trying to put a crown on Donald Trump. Please do not confuse me. I hope your listeners don't, misconstrue what I'm saying. It is supernatural. And it is a reaction to the prayer. You think of how many people for how many years have been aware of what's going on in this country, have prayed for deliverance, have prayed for somebody to speak the truth, have prayed for truth. Just please, just give me the truth. And here we have a man that is in the position he's in, and he's speaking an awful lot of truth. Warts and all, he is speaking more truth. I mean, dare say even more in a lot of ways than Ron Paul. And Ron Paul never got the traction that he got.
He didn't get the traction he deserved. I loved Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Still do.
Sure.
But I mean, he was a great American who tried to do the right thing. You know, you're right about the progress. I've interviewed Patrick Wood many, many times, and he's become a good friend. And in 1980-81, in that time frame, I came across a book that he wrote. He co-authored it with the late Professor Anthony Sutton, called Trilaterals Over Washington. And it made so much sense, and he documented everything, and I didn't want to believe it. And then I looked at the book again, and I go, this has got to be true. And I would talk to people about it, and they looked at me like I was a nutcase. In fact, my roommate from college was recently visiting me this week, traveling cross country. He stopped in for a couple days, And he even reminded me of that. He said, you were way ahead of the curve on the Trilateral Commission. Now, this is 1980, and I could find nothing in libraries. This is before the Internet. And I found one reference to the Trilateral Commission in the Atlantic Monthly, which was a trilateral mouthpiece. And it was very benign. And then, let's go forward. I have put this picture of Hillary Clinton speaking to a group of people, and in the background is the moniker board for the Council on Foreign Relations, the first cousin to the Trilateral Commission. That's how far the globalists have come. They're out of the closet, Daniel. They're not hiding what they're doing anymore. And I believe they're coming after us.
Well, they're forced.
I don't believe it.
They're forced to. Because they, you know, I'm sure they have computer models and they're running scenarios. They're seeing how fast Americans are waking up. But they're way out in the open, and they're forced to do that because they don't have a choice. They're going to lose ground if they don't. Every day that goes by, we are winning the information war. More and more people are not believing what they're saying. The same old mind control tricks are not working, although they certainly work on a big percentage of people, don't get me wrong. But more and more, that's not true. And that fringe of people and that group of people that we need is saying, wait a minute, I don't believe this. And it's changing. And you know, my grandmother gave me None Dare Call a Conspiracy. That was the book that kind of broke my paradigm. And you think about, we're sitting here talking. My grandmother gave me a book. You got, one of your friends gave you a book. And now we're sitting here talking on a national radio show all over the Internet, talking about this knowledge, the power of information, in just two little books and what they did. And now they're sparking this conversation that we're saying, and the amount of information that you put out. Never underestimate the small things that you do. Never. One of the coolest things my uncle, what he used to do, this is the best idea, is he made slips of paper, just little slips of paper with some important article that was out, something about the vaccines or something about, you know, what have you. And then he would have about 10 of them in his pocket, and then when he'd go out to the grocery store, he'd meet people, and he'd just say, hey, did you hear about the CDC whistleblower saying that vaccines were linked to autism? No, I didn't. Well, here you go. Here's a slip of paper. Simple. Easy. You never know what your words will do and how God will take your actions and magnify them. And many years later, you have no idea where it will be. And that is exactly what has come about with the Trump candidacy and the movement behind him and the popularism behind him. Because we have had years and decades of people who have, in the face of overwhelming odds, in the face, in plain sight, thinking there's no hope, they have pushed forward. And they have pushed the information, and they have pushed the agenda of truth and to wake up people. And here we are, 2016, with a candidate who is, I'll tell you, is pretty freaking awake. And, you know, whether you like this comb over or not, I have to be behind him. Not 100%, like never before, 1,000%.
Yeah, it's the last time we had a candidate even, and it was only one statement, even say anything remotely close to the courage that Trump has displayed, was Ronald Reagan. And I'll never, and this is also the same year. This was in the 1980 election, in the campaign. And this was in the Republican primary. And I remember turning on the news one morning to ABC News, and I saw a clip of Ronald Reagan, and he was saying, you know, people don't want George H.W. Bush. He was a member of the Trilateral Commission. And this is after I just read the book. This is the same year. This is the same year that I'm reading Pat's book. And by the way, None Dare Call It a Conspiracy. I got that book the same year someone gave it to me. And that was, 1980 was really my partial wake-up. It wasn't until the government tried to steal my land that I really come out and start working. But when I looked at that, when Ronald Reagan made that statement, now they got to him because 2 days later, Bush was announced as his running mate. But nonetheless, we still saw, you know, that comment. We have to go back to 1980 over 30 years ago to see a presidential candidate making a statement on the level of what Trump is making. Only the thing is Trump does it every day.
It's unbelievable. It's a dream. Again, go back 2 years. It's a dream to have a candidate saying these things. Whether he turns out to be a Judas goat, whether he's a traitor, I don't believe he is. I don't know him. I don't believe he is, but you have to support the man for what he's doing and the people who are against him. You have to. If you don't, what will you support? Are you going to just support nothing and just say, well, it's done, nothing I can do? No! We have a legitimate chance to throw the establishment trilateral conspirator Illuminati plan. We have a chance to throw it back decades with this election. Decades. We honestly do. And this is the result of efforts of a lot of people for a lot of years.
You know, somebody asked me the other day, you're one of those Trump supporters, huh? Is that what I'm hearing here? And I said, do you like celibacy? He looks at me cross-eyed. He says, what in the hell are you talking about, Hodges? And I said, I just wondered, you like celibacy? He says, well, hell no, I don't like celibacy. And I said, well, Trump is the only girl in town that's going to save your future. He's the only one left to dance with.
Boy, isn't that the truth. I mean, what other candidate do we deserve? I mean, do we think Thomas Jefferson's walking through the door? I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Really.
Jeez, are you for real?
Well, if it's not Hillary, then it's her good buddy, running mate, Klein, who wants to bring in even more Muslims without screening them for the terrorists that could be coming in with the good people. It's crazy. And, boy, you want to talk about a den of corruption? Just look at the state of Virginia, number one in child sex trafficking. You know what's really interesting? I'll tell you a real quick story here. Frank Wolf, congressman, I believe in the 1st District, borders Washington, D.C., and he used to have on his congressional website all the stuff he was doing to block child sex trafficking. And it's big business among the elite. Let's not pull any punches here.
And
he was defeated.
Yeah, no.
Actually, let's put it this way. He was basically forced out to not run for re-election. And that's Virginia. And that's the vice presidential candidate from the Democratic Party, who, by the way, took $160,000+ of inappropriate gifts. Boy, he'll fit in right real well with Hillary. It's kind of like who's going to steal the most silverware when they visit each other's house. I mean, they're just a bunch of criminals. They're just a bunch of criminals. I want to ask you a factual question here about food. Okay? And I am proud to represent Numana Food because I know this is what the American people need to be doing. And guns, gold, ammo, food, water, those are your essentials. The Bible, too, certainly we'll throw that in. But with food, how much food would you say people need to store for each member of their family? 6 months, a year, 3 months, 2 years? What do you think?
Well, I would give a different answer, you know, as disingenuous as it sounds. I would give a different answer depending on who I was talking to. Let me explain. If I was talking to somebody that was brand new, I would not overwhelm them with saying a year. I would not overwhelm them saying 6 months or 2 years because I've seen it too much. It just ends up freezing people. So if I'm talking to that person, I'm saying, look, you don't know what's coming up. Why don't you work on getting a month for everybody in your house? 1 month. That's your goal. Start with a month. And that's how I would talk to that person. If I'm talking to somebody that already has a little bit that's, you know, maybe a little further down the road, then I would say 6 months. And then I would, you know, and on and on and on. And what I would ultimately want to be my goal, let me tell you what I have for my family. I have 2 years for my family. I have 2 years in my house. Obviously, I have a food storage company. It's a lot, you know, probably a lot easier for me to do that than other people. But I have 2 years, and I've kind of thought that through for several reasons. 2 years gives you a lot of security and a lot of flexibility and a lot of bargaining, trading power for whatever reason. And it's a no-lose investment. You can't lose. You store high-quality food that tastes good. You like to eat it. You can't lose. Everybody knows the price of food's going up. That's obvious. So you cannot lose. And when you eat it in the future, you're paying yourself a dividend. You buy gold, you buy stocks, you buy, you know, all these things because they secure you financially. Well, the amount of food is good enough food. It's not just food storage that sits there in the corner and collects dust. You can actually eat it and feel good about it. That's what we've done here. I like to eat. I mean, if you know me and we've talked about this a lot, Dave, I like to eat. So if I taste the recipes and I don't like them, then we don't sell them. And then we're always working on improving it. So that's, we want good quality food. So in a roundabout way, to answer your question, I personally like a year to 2 years for me. That's what that would be my goal. But if I was talking to somebody new, I would say get 30 days. Start there.
I think that's really good advice. I'm with you. I'm about in the same ballpark you were at with food storage. But I think, well, two things. One, I know the FEMA statistic, the average American only has 3 days worth of food and water. I know that.
Yep.
And the other thing that concerns me was, this is about, 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, former basketball player of mine living in the Memphis area answered a door. And these guys had pulled right up on his lawn in their black Suburban, and they jump out with their suits. Now, this is a large young man. He's 6'7", weighed about 250 in his playing days. And he walks outside and says, "What the hell do you think you're all doing?" And they said, "Well, we're from FEMA." And he goes, "Well, he didn't even know what FEMA was." And they said, "We're going to come into your house, and we're looking for how much food you have stored." And he said, "I don't think so. Do you have a warrant?" And they said, "No." And one guy pulled his jacket back, he said he could see the sidearm. And he said, "Well, you know, discretion is the better part of valor here, because there's four of them, one of me, and they're armed, and I'm not." He let them in. Now, the story he told was really interesting. They didn't go to the kitchen. He goes, "Hey, where are you all going? The kitchen's over here." He said, no, we want to see your pantry." They were there to measure food storage. And I also have heard from other people, after I've told this story before on the air, where other people have wrote to me and said, that happened to me too. I remember a long conversation I had with a lady in Atlanta. My concern, and the reason I'm telling you this, is I think they're doing spot checks to kind of like, they're kind of like political polls, you know, sample so many to get an answer on how much is out there.
Exactly.
I think they're going to use Executive Order 13603. They're going to seize people's food when all hell breaks loose. And
well,
I think people need
try.
To be hiding their, I think they're going to, I think people need to hide the food. That's my point.
I think that's a fantastic idea. I hate to be, when you tell people this, you come off, if you just listen to it, it almost sounds paranoid. Yeah, but,
yes.
One of my favorite lines from any movie I've ever seen was The X-Files. And then The X-Files, Scully, of course, is giving Mulder a hard time. And Mulder says, if you think you're paranoid, you're not paranoid enough. So that's what I have to say about that.
I don't think they're just going to come after the guns. When I look at Executive Order 13603, and they want to take every resource, I mean everything, food production, food storage, everything.
Well, I want you to back up and look at this from a little different angle. You've written about this a lot. I can't remember the one guy's name who wrote Confessions of an Economic Hitman. But he's talking about how the IMF, America, CIA, they would go into these countries and destabilize them. They would loan them money and then back by their resources and then destabilize the government and capture resources and take their independence, take their wealth. Well, that's on an international, nationalistic scale. Well, it's the same thing with you at your home. It's just different battle. So the battle for independence. Now look at Venezuela. When you don't have food to eat, you're vulnerable, you're dependent, you're at risk, you're all these things. So food stamps, all these things that the government's done in the economy, taking out the industrial base, the job, the freedom, the industry, all these things have created just Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It's not on Iran anymore. It's on the American people now, and just on a totally different scale. And so anything that they are moving to do and threaten to do, like the food storage, just like you said, executive orders, then we should be doing the opposite, because that's how you counteract it. If they want to make you dependent, then your independence relies on your own actions. And, this ethic, I've said it a lot of times on this show, the old-fashioned root-cellar mentality of America, that we stored what we eat, what we stored, we had sufficient, we were ready for the Depression. You know, that incident in American history, it was an indelible mark that generations of people lived with. Your freedom depends on your ability to sustain yourself, because everything in our society is under siege, and the institutions that we have relied on up to this point, you cannot with confidence say they'll be there in the future. So that leaves, go look in the mirror and then go look inside and say your simple little prayer between you, God, and that mirror. That's, and your family, that's where your source of strength and sustenance will come from.
I think that's very good advice. Final question before we get into some promotional things that I think people need to hear is, what made you get into the food storage business? What motivated you?
Well, I, just like a lot of people I was looking out there, I didn't really like what's going on. I wanted to get prepared. We got some rice and beans, some staple things. We wanted to try some meals. I like to eat, really. Not just a sales pitch. I like to eat. Our family enjoys it. The stuff that we tried up there, frankly, it disappointed us. I mean, it's just that simple. I don't know, through a series of events, through a series of meetings of people and trying to, we just made the decision, heck, we could do better than that. We can do something better. I don't like GMOs. I don't like MSG. I don't like aspartame, high fructose corn syrup. I don't like a food store that tastes like cardboard, and I guess if I was starving, I would eat it, but other than that, I don't, it's just going to sit there and collect dust. I did not like that concept of food storage. And so that was impetus for the man, and that was our goal and our motto. And our goal was that we wanted to provide the superior products to survival and preparedness industry. We wanted to provide the best food storage we could find or we could create. And we wanted to always push that envelope and keep it on the forefront and keep it right there. That's why we started the Manna.
Those are very good reasons. Well, people can take advantage of our sale that we have through, I think, midweek. Is what we said, and that's you go to demana.com/Hodges and put in the coupon code LABOR for Labor Day. Put in LABOR and you'll get 5% off your next purchase. And Daniel, I agree with you. I think the simplest thing to do is to start small, and then as people start becoming experienced in prepping, they'll start to realize what levels they need to survive. Hey, well, look, I want to thank you for joining us. It's always so informative when you come on, and you're such an expert on our history and the Constitution. It's just a pleasure to have you.
Well, this hour went really quick, and Dave, our relationship with your show is one of the highlights of our company, and your audience and what you're doing. We just encourage everybody to just take actions to help their family, and if you so choose, we got some great products for you, and Dave will tell you about them.
We got to scoot top of the hour break, and it's not forgiving, but thanks so much, Daniel. God bless you.
God bless.
We'll be back in hour number two. Bye. We'll be back in hour number two with Doug Hagman.